so we are making our transition in just a moment. And so I'm inviting Jim to say hello.
Hello.
Yes, and for Catherine and Paulette, we will be back with you again on Wednesday of next week. So stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program generally about science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. Well, we're going to deal a bit more with the latter two this morning. Sad to say, it's another obituary show. This one dedicated to the talent of Stan Freeberg. Stay tuned.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. Full disclosure, I am thanked by name during the closing credits of cartoonist Bill Plimpton's new film, Cheatin'. came as a complete surprise to me and a pleasant one. But the reason for it is that I saw the film early on, really liked it, and made some modest efforts to help it find a distributor. Not sure how much I actually helped, but I guess it was enough to get a little shout-out during the credit roll, so that's nice. Bottom line, for the sake of this review, is that I liked the film first, then helped, then got thanked. So nothing about this review is going to be the tail wagging the dog. I come to it clean. And yes, Cheatin' is a really good film. Bill Plimpton, who's best remembered for such classic animated shorts as 25 Ways to Quit Smoking and one of my favorites, One of Those Days, had a breakthrough with his last feature film, Idiots and Angels. There, he decided to jettison dialogue completely and let his distinctive artwork based on rough pencil-style outlines and caricatures that occupy a dimensionally curved reality that's like everything run through a fisheye lens. He let that do the talking, and it was the best decision he could ever make. He carries forward on that with Cheatin', no G, an apostrophe at the end, in which a newlywed couple has their idyllic marriage sorely tested when a photograph rigged by a jealous prospective lover lures the husband away from his vows. Interesting thing about Bill Plimpton, he's known for his, for want of a better term, edgy humor. I don't really like that word, but it's the only one I can call on at the moment. He earns that rep. His characters are brilliantly surreal and malleable. Limbs can stretch as needed, and bodies can twist into all varieties of impossible forms, and the universe they occupy is frequently filled with raunchiness, violence, and disasters man-made, natural, and at times supernatural. But he doesn't really plunge into the darkest depths. It's more the curdled romanticism of James M. Cain than the aggressive assaults of a Michael O'Donohue. For all the wild hyperbole of Cheatin's imagery, one brilliant sequence has an overhead survey of the couple's home the morning after the wedding night, a full-on coital disaster zone that includes a car crashed through the wall, a renegade vibrator, a clown mask, and a flounder. And despite the similarly hyperbolic plot, eventually a homicidal thug, a disgraced magician, and his mind transfer machine get dragged into the scenario. What's wonderful is that Plimpton has discovered that anarchy and empathy are not at odds with each other. In the quasi-post-war world of Cheatin', where seaside amusement piers can still be healthy profit centers, gas costs 40 cents a gallon, and there's nary a television in sight, romantic love and sexual abandon can dwell hand in hand, and when a couple's estrangement gets literalized by showing their marriage bed fracturing in two to float the wayward husband away, the heartbreak is quite real. Bill Plimpton has always been a singular talent. He still does all the animation himself, and it's amazing how one pen can choreograph distinct personalities into each character. With Cheatin', he confirms that he's become a hell of a storyteller as well. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website, so check out what you missed by going to Mighty Movie Podcast.
Thank you. And now we'd like to...
Mr. Feber?
Yes, who are you?
I'm Mary Ann Feemster. I'm 10 years old. I've been sitting in the audience.
Yes?
I've been thinking over what you said about how you're doing this because there aren't any more radio programs.
Yes?
Mr. Feber, what's a radio program?
Well, when you listen to the radio in the morning, what do you hear?
Disc jockeys and news, or sometimes news and disc jockeys. Is it possible to hear something else?
It was back in the 1940s, yes.
Back in the olden days?
Yes, there were what we call radio programs, like what we're doing here with actors and live musicians and sound effects men and guest stars.
Oh, you mean like a television program when the picture tube blows out?
Something like that, yes.
What did you look at?
He didn't look at anything. He just listened.
Boy, talk about your radical ideas.
Look, dear, you're just too young to remember, I guess. I'll have someone from the audience explain it. Anybody here remember radio? And anybody? Anybody at all?
I do.
Oh, good. Good, here's a lady. Here's a lady. Come right up here, madam. Watch your step, dear. Yeah, you do remember radio programs, do you?
Oh, yes, I remember them.
You used to listen to them, did you?
I did as a girl, yes. My goodness, yes.
For the benefit of this young lady, could you tell us what it was like?
Well, it was, no, dear, I'm trying to remember.
Just take your time.
Well, if my memory serves me correct, we'd hurry to get the dishes done, and we'd all sit around the living room listening to the,
radio.
Radio, that's it. Oh, we looked at each other, kind of stared off into space while Inner Sanctum was on, the Whistler, the Shadow.
Huh?
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Do you know who said that?
Who?
Lamont Cranston, that's who. Compared to him, my dear, James Bond is a fink.
You used your imagination.
Your what?
Look, you could do things on radio, see, that you couldn't possibly do on television. My sound effects man and I will give you a demonstration right now.
Okay.
Okay, people. Now, when I give you the cue, I want the 500-foot mountain of whipped cream to be shoved into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will appear overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry... which will be dropped into the whipped cream to the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Cue the Air Force. Cue the maraschino cherry. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras. Now, you want to try that on television?
I see what you mean.
Stan Freberg was an utter genius. He was subversive, although subversive in what way, I'm not sure I can say. Just in anything that he cared for, what he cared for. Was radio, as you just heard from his album Freeburg Underground. He cared for voices. He knew his voices. He was many, many voices. You're saying, who's Stan Freeburg? He was Cecil, the C6C serpent. He produced many of the commercials, TV commercials, that you may remember when you were young. He took over Jack Benny's radio slot. And you will hear on Max Schmid's Golden Age of Radio and any shows Max will be doing in the next week. Look at your program guide at WBAI.org. And you will hear some of those radio productions. And in a little while, you're going to hear one of his classic albums, The United States of America, Part 1, Volume 1. Let me read you a section from his obituary in the New York Times. Freeburg was 88 when he died yesterday being Wednesday. Yes, Wednesday. Mr. Freeburg made his most lasting impact. No, I'm sorry, it was Tuesday on which he died. Today is sort of Wednesday from my point of view. It's been a very long day. I went to a Broadway matinee and... still up from that. Mr. Freeburg made his most lasting impact in advertising, a field he entered because he considered most commercials moronic. Usually working as a creative consultant to large agencies, he shattered Madison Avenue conventions. He once produced a musical commercial nearly 6 minutes long to explain why his client, Butternut Coffee, lagged behind its competitors by 5 years in developing instant brew. His subversive, you see, I'm not the only one to use that word, but oddly effective approach caused Advertising Age to call him the father of the funny commercial and one of the 20th century's most influential ad men. Mr. Freberg's tactics worked for the simple reason that he was funny, having honed his humor on some of history's best-selling comedy records. Paul McCartney said in 1985 that the Beatles' anarchic humor owed much to his influence. Stephen King and David Mamet separately remembered him when they were young and the fantastic vision Mr. Freberg concocted in the radio commercial that helped unleash their imagination. And actually, that routine was also done as a commercial, but it's like 1 minute long, being a commercial, just somebody who I think was actually played by Paul Frees. By the way, I hope you all recognized in that bit June Ferre, one of the great, great, great women in voiceover work. You would probably remember her best as Granny in all the Warner Brothers cartoons, but she's also Rocket J. Squirrel, Rocky the Flying Squirrel. Great, great voice, June Ferre. Still with us. Mr. Freberg used humor to declare war on post-war advertising, which in the 1950s was criticized by the likes of the economist John Kenneth Galbraith and the social critic Vance Packard as selling people stuff they didn't need. There we go. Fellow admin saw Mr. Freberg's renegade approach as an insult. As the insult that it actually was. Although he was in the Radio Hall of Fame, he was never elected to the Advertising Hall of Fame. But his wackiness fit sensibilities increasingly attuned to the satirical comedy of Mort Saul and Lenny Bruce. Mr. Freberg even committed eagerly the ad industry's greatest heresy, lampooning the deficiency of a paying client's own products. His Pacific Airlines advertisements took on the fear of flying by telling people that even pilots were afraid. As part of the campaign, flight attendants passed out survival kits that included security blankets, a lucky rabbit's foot, and fortune cookies bearing the slogan, "It could be worse." Upon landing, the attendants were encouraged to exclaim, "We made it! How about that?" How do you sell sunsweet prunes? Mr. Freberg figured that at least one selling point was that their pits had been removed. His ad declared that another improvement was on the way. Today the pits, tomorrow the wrinkles. The Times doesn't mention sunsweet. Marches on. To pitch Chung King, he had an announcer saying, 9 out of 10 doctors prefer Chung King. The camera then panned to show them 9 of them Asian, 1 Caucasian. Mr. Freberg's confidence in his salesmanship showed in his preference for contracts that gave him a percentage of the sales if the commercials worked. It also showed in a clause in all of his contracts, the decision as to what is funny and what is not funny shall rest solely with Mr. Freberg. The article then gets into some biographical information, but I will go on about what I consider some of the classic, all-time classic television commercials. Ann Miller tap dancing on Campbell's Soup. Big, big, big production number. Hebrew National Hot Dogs. Uncle Sam trying to eat a hot dog while the voiceover, who was Freberg, said, "Were you aware that the federal government allows X amount of fat in your hot dog?" And Uncle Sam looks a little concerned for a second, then continues to try to put it in his mouth. And he says, "Are you aware that it can contain these chemicals and those chemicals?" And now Uncle Sam starts scowling. And there's a third example. And then the announcer, Freberg, says, "Well, we're Hebrew National. We don't have any of those issues or those problems with our food because here at Hebrew National, we answer to a higher authority." And the camera pans up to show his son. That would be typical of Freberg, that kind of edgy stuff that ultimately wasn't as controversial necessarily as it seemed. He did a lampoon on Lark TV commercials. Now, for most of this, you're probably too young to remember. But the Lark commercials were people walking, you know, with cinema verite cameras walking down the street and holding up signs from their car saying, show us, it was Lucky, not Lark, show us your Lucky Pack. And, you know, every few people would show up their Lucky cigarettes. I'm sure they're all gone with cancer now. And he did the same thing, only with Gino's frozen pizza rolls, with using the William Tell overture, which the Lucky commercials also use, but the chorus singing "Have a pizza, have a pizza, have a pizza roll" kind of thing, as somebody with a Kodak Instamag camera ran through, and everybody at this very chic party goes into their jacket pocket or their purse and shows that they're carrying Gino's pizza rolls. And all of a sudden, a fellow dressed to look like William Tell says, "I'd like to talk to you about that music that you're using." And Clayton Moore and Jay Silverheels show up. It's the Lone Ranger and Tonto, the actors who played them. And the Lone Ranger says, "I'd like to talk to you about that music as well." And Jay Silverheels, in his offensive Indian version, said, "Have 'em pizza roll, Kemosabe." And they each eat one. And as they go away, the fellow with the Kodak Instamatic camera says, "Who was that masked man?" And a woman replies, "I don't know, but he left this," and it's a silver pizza roll. I mean, this is just the most insane, brilliant kind of stuff. So that's just the advertising end, part of the advertising end of Freeburg's work. Continuing to excerpts from the New York Times obit. He went on to be the voice of many cartoon characters. Oh, wait. Blah, 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 blah. After stepping off a bus in the center of Hollywood, he knocked on the door of a talent agency and was soon auditioning for the Warner Brothers cartoon department, which hired him. He went on to be the voice of many characters. For Warner Brothers, he was, among others, Tosh, one of the Goofy Gophers. For Disney, he was a beaver in Lady and the Tramp. He continued doing voices until 2011, when he reprised his Warner Brothers character Pete Puma on the Looney Tunes show for Cartoon Network. After 2 years in the Army, Mr. Freeburg worked without pay for a radio show in which he was... I'd like to hear people working without pay for a radio show. Oh, wait. I've been doing it for 40-something years. Well, anyway. In which he was interviewed as numerous different men on the street. He got paying job as a guitar player with a dance band, and then quickly learned to play the instrument. His jokes more than compensated for his musical ineptitude. Bob Clampett, part of the Looney Tunes crew, recruited him for the TV puppet show Time for Beanie, which ran from 1949 to 1954. Mr. Freeburg was the voice of a 300-year-old sea serpent named Cecil. During this period, Mr. Freeburg began making comedy records, among them spoofs of popular singers like Elvis Presley, Harry Belafonte, and television shows like Lawrence Welk's, presaging the sort of humor seen on Saturday Night Live a quarter century later. His 1953 hit St. George and the Dragonet was a parody of Dragnet, with the Middle Ages, with the detective hero, Mr. Freeburg, imitating Jack Webb, rescuing a maiden from a dragon. Blah, 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 John and Marsha. In 1957, Mr. Freeburg was selected to fill Jack Benny's time slot on CBS Radio. He ran into trouble with jokes about the hydrogen bomb and angered executives by refusing tobacco advertisements. CBS pulled the show after 15 weeks, allowing Mr. Freeburg ever after to call himself, apparently without question, the last comedian with a regular show on a major radio network. It goes on and talks a little bit about an aborted Broadway production he was going to do with David Merrick based on the record album that we are about to hear shortly. Freeburg innovated radio. He innovated advertising. He innovated many people's lives. He was responsible for some of the best moments, best remembered moments that people had, although his name was not a household name. But his voice was indeed a household voice. And he did a great, great deal for us all. If you know his work, welcome back to it. WBAI used to have a tradition of playing a portion of what we are about to hear on what used to be called Columbus Day. And along with some fireside theater and other things, a tradition I believe Ed Woodard started here at BAI in the 60s. And I should again mention that Max Schmid will be doing more of the radio work. This is one of the comedy albums. But Max will be doing some of the radio work that Freeburg had done through the years. And Max has, well, fairly encyclopedic knowledge. In fact, I found it very, very difficult to find that bit for sale anywhere on the internet or for stealing anywhere on the dark side of the internet. Max actually had to rip that off of an LP so that we could all hear it, and yet it's one of Freeburg's best remembered bits. So, one of my favorite things of all time, you will hear, for those who know classic voices, you're going to be hearing Stan Freeburg Presents the United States of America, Volume 1, the early years. It was like 20 or 30 years later that he did Volume 2. But let's see, who are... If there's a listing of the voices. This is a nice booklet. I'm actually playing something from CD instead of relying on the darned computer for this stuff. And there's... Oh, my God. There's all the lyrics to all the songs. But... okay. Here we go. Let's get to who the voices are. Maybe I should outro it, but I want you to be aware of some of the people you're going to hear. Jesse White as King Ferdinand, among others. Peter Leeds, I remember him. I saw him on Broadway a couple of times. June Foray, of course. Peter Leeds doubling on a lot of roles, as does June Foray. Helen Klebe as Betsy Ross. Freeburg doing many of the voices. Walter Tetley will be heard as Myron in The Discovery of Electricity. And Walter Tetley is probably best remembered as Sherman, as in Peabody and Sherman. Shep Mankin, more Walter Tetley. Okay. Let's hear it, and I'll give you the credits after. But this CD, thankfully, is in print, and I think available for download. I've not played a CD or tracked a CD since we came to the... Whoops! Gee, I was shocked. I was shocked. Apparently, it actually queues up. Wow. Things work here better than I thought. Okay. So I hope that it tracks through instead of my having to hit whatever, every cut. But since this album runs 54 minutes, I think we better get going. They introduce themselves. But let me say that this is WBAI in New York City and WBAI.org.
Stan Freeburg modestly presents The United States of America. The early years.
Hello,
I will voice over the overture to tell you this is a 1961 album. It is that old, so certain things may have to be taken into account.
Madrid, the Queen of Spain grants an audience to an obscure Italian sailor. There in her chambers, plans are made destined to change the course of history.
Yeah, all right, we'll go over it once again. First, you hawk the jewels, you give me the money, and I buy the ships. Then I discover the New World, you dump the king, and I'll send for you.
You say you'll send for me, darling, but will you?
Now, look, we've been all through this before.
I know, but really, you're such a dreamer. You'll go out there and you'll sail right off the edge of the world.
I will not.
Wait. You're such a child.
Madrid. The Queen of Spain grants an audience to an obscure Italian sailor. There in her chambers, plans are made destined to change the course of history.
Yeah, all right, we'll go over it once again. First, you hawk the jewels, you give me the money, and I buy the ships. Then I discover the New World, you dump the king, and I'll send for you.
You say you'll send for me, darling, but will you?
Now, look, we've been all through this before.
I know, but really, you're such a dreamer. You'll go out there and you'll sail right off the edge of the world.
I will not.
Wait. You're such a charming boy, darling. Why don't you forget all this? I'll set you up with a nice little Fiat agency over in West Barcelona.
I don't want a Fiat agency.
Well, then why don't you go to art school like your friend Da Vinci? I'll put you through.
Look, if Lenny wants to starve to death, that's up to Lenny. Me, I want to discover the New World. Carry out my dream.
His Majesty, King Ferdinand.
The king.
Oh, sure. He'll be at the Inquisition all afternoon, huh?
Time just slipped away. Quickly, take the jewels and go over the balcony.
Too late.
Good afternoon, dear. How was the Inquisition? Amusing?
Dullsville. Same old... Hey, who's that?
Oh, you remember Christopher Columbus.
Oh, you mean old round world? You and your bohemian friends.
He's not bohemian, he's Italian.
Italian, bohemian, look at him in that hat. Is that a crazy sailor?
Crazy. I'll tell you how crazy. He's a man with a dream, a vision of a new world, whose alabaster cities gleam undimmed by human tears, with purple mountain majesties above the 2 cents plain.
Fruited.
He holds these dreams to be self-evident, this round, round world, with Indians and justice for all. Let us then go forward together toward Miami Beach, that the dream of this crazy Italian boy, indivisible, should not perish from the map.
Bravo!
Was that moving? Was that a great bet?
Listen, huh? I always said this girl had a lot... Wait a minute! I ask a simple question, I get a pageant. Why should Spain sponsor you? Why don't you go to Portugal?
I did. They bought the prices right.
Oh.
Then I have your permission to sail?
Have you had your shots?
I have.
Permission granted.
Grazie. Arrivederci.
Hasta la vista.
Adios.
Adios, adios muchachos, caballeros de la
vida. You get out of here. Strange, he left by the balcony.
Force of habit, I guess.
Yeah. How's that again?
Nothing.
Isabella, when are you gonna quit fooling around with these nuts?
Admiral Columbus, sir, the men are weary, on the point of madness.
Well, that's the trouble with labor today. Don't they realize we're going to discover the new world?
You've been saying that for the last 57 days.
Well, nobody forced you to come along, Your Majesty.
My doctor told me I should go to Florida for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I still can't see what you needed three ships for.
I got a better deal on the fleet rate.
I'll accept that, but we better sight land pretty soon. There's rumblings of mutiny.
Really?
Yeah, come over here and listen.
All right.
Rumble, rumble, rumble. Mutiny, mutiny, mutiny.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I'll jump up here in the rigging and speak to him.
You mean on top of everything else, this ship is rigged?
Now hear this. This is the Admiral speaking. I know the going has been rough, but if we can just hold out a little while...
Rumble, rumble.
Stop that rumbling down there.
Rumble.
Who could blame him? The whole thing is madness. I don't like the way the crew is acting.
Well, you're overplaying a little bit yourself there.
I tell you, the world is flat. And that's that.
It's round as your hat.
It's flat as your head.
It's round.
It's flat.
It's a round, round world. It's a round, round world. I contend it's round and it's gonna be found when all the results are in. It's a round world now and it's always been.
Flat, flat world. It's a flat, flat world. I insist it's flat as a welcoming mat and he's sailing off the end. How about our crazy Australian
friend? Get hip, would I climb aboard this ship? If I didn't have odds, the earth was highly spherical.
It's a miracle if it's
square,
it's
square king. You're a square, square king. If you don't believe, you're gonna receive the shock of your royal life. When the ship pulls in at Miami.
Yo ho ho and a Dramamine. We are loyal subjects of the king and queen. But what kind of nut would you have to be to borrow a ship and put out to sea when you don't know what's on the other side?
Got a heart attack, one brother who said getting there was half the fun. Give up my throne and it's gonna be found. No wonder I'm turning.
Crazy kind of scheme, get it's a cockamamie dream.
Would I climb aboard this ship? If I didn't have odds, the earth was highly spherical.
It's a miracle if it's
yo, ho, ho, to the wind and rain. You're a tycoon, coming up with first John Wayne.
If you don't like believe, you're gonna receive away. The how shock of the your salty lies.
When I take command in the name of
flame, that land in the name of
Isabella and Ferdinand.
That's Ferdinand and Isabella.
Of this round, round.
It's a crazy kind of scheme. It's a cockamamie dream. But we hope it's a round, round world.
Well, for all our sakes,
land
I hope.
Ho!
What was that?
French horns.
No, no, I mean before that.
Oh, it was a lookout. He sighted land.
Hooray!
Quickly, hand me the glass.
All right.
Now, now, the other one.
Oh. Oh.
To the new world.
Likewise. All right, go ahead. Give the kid top billing.
Well, it was just a thought.
No, no,
you know.
Go ahead.
All right, all right. I claim this land in the name of Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand of Spain. Well, first I stick the flag in the sand, and then I...
Watch yourself, Admiral. Natives. They may be hostile.
Well, we're all a little hostile now and then. Some of us are able to sublimate, others can't adjust. You know how it is.
I know, but you better try and talk to them.
All right, all right. Hello there. Hello there. we white men, other side of ocean. My name... Christopher Columbus.
Oh, you over here on a Fulbright?
Huh? No, I'm over here on an Isabella, as a matter of fact. Which reminds me, I want to take a few of you guys back with me in the boat to prove I discovered you.
What do you mean, discover us? We discover you.
You discovered us?
Certainly. We discover you on beach here, is all how you look at it.
Yeah, I never thought of that. Well, at any rate, my men and I were wondering if you could spare a little food.
What kind num-nums you want?
Well, what is that strange-looking plant you're holding there, with little yellow kernels?
You mean this?
Yes. What is that?
French horns.
No. What you're holding in your hand.
Oh, corn.
That's what I thought it was. What else you got to eat around here?
Oh, berries, herbs, natural fruits, and organically grown vegetables.
Just as I suspected. What kind of a diet is that? That's why I've come here, to fulfill my dream.
You have a dream?
Yes, I do.
Would you like to talk about it?
I certainly would. My dream is to open the first Italian restaurant in your country. Give you some real food. Starches, spaghetti, cholesterol, all the better things. That's called progress, you see? Now, right here would be a good location for the restaurant. Ocean view and all that. Is there room for a parking lot?
You kidding? Whole country is parking lot.
I suppose. Well, I'd like to put a little deposit down on the property here.
Okay.
I only have a few doubloons on me, so if you'll direct me to the nearest bank, I'll get a check cash.
You out of luck today. Bank's closed.
Oh? Why?
Columbus Day.
Oh, yeah. We going out on that joke?
No, we do reprise of song. That help.
But not much.
Not much, no.
Round, round, and the world sleeve. It's a newfound world. I guess it's time to leave.
But the land holds good like a continent should. Perhaps we can pick up some kind of work in an Indian extravaganza.
Why, herb or bonanza?
Please don't call us, we'll call you.
Step aside, pal, meet the new.
The Jesus of this round, round world.
November 1621. By now the white man has arrived in great numbers, not only at Miami, but at Jamestown, at Plymouth, and at Salem, Massachusetts. The Puritans have established a thriving colony, enjoying all the social and cultural refinements of a modern society.
Hiya, Harv. Who are you taking to the witch burning Saturday night?
Prudence Adams. Who are you taking to the Rotary Club luncheon?
I haven't got a date yet, but I hear it's going to be quite a spread.
Well, Mayor Pennypacker, how's it look for re-election?
Great, great, great. Never looked better.
Yeah, what about the Indian vote?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you're not too popular with the Indians. They could lose you the election.
That's possible?
Well, they outnumber us.
Well, that's the trouble. You give them an inch and they take over.
But, Mayor, they were here before we were. We moved in on them.
So we did. Well, there's just something about them. They wear funny shoes. They don't even have buckles on them.
Be that as it may, election is Friday. You better make some gesture this week.
Like what?
Well, how about if you make a concession and pick an Indian as a running mate? You'd be sure to carry the Indian block.
What? Anything happened to me, you'd have a mayor that wasn't a Puritan. He'd probably take orders directly from Chief Powhatan.
Yeah.
Say, I got it. The big luncheon tomorrow, the one under the trees.
What about it?
We'll ask an Indian. That'll impress the rest of them.
We could even announce you're going to put one in your cabinet.
No need to go that far. Just have one to lunch.
It'll be great press.
Mayor Pennypacker comes out for equality. Justice. Votes. What a slogan. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Show him we're a regular bunch this week. Show him we're as liberal as can be. Let him know he's almost as good as we. Make a feathered friend feel fed this week. Overlook the fact he's red this week. Let him share our Quaker oats, 'cause he's useful when he votes. Take an Indian to lunch.
2, 4, 6, 8, who do we tolerate? Indians, Indians, rah, rah, rah. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Let him sit right down and munch this week.
Let's give in and all do the brotherhood bit. Just make sure we don't make a habit of it.
an Indian to dine this week. Show him we don't draw the line this week. We know everyone can't be as American as we. After all, we came over on the Mayflower. Take an Indian, not a wooden Indian, but a real life Indian to lunch.
Needless to say, the luncheon there under the trees was a great success, and a good time was had by Puritans and Indian alike. Everything came off beautifully, with the exception of one minor catastrophe.
What do you mean you cooked the turkey, Charlie?
Well, I cooked the turkey, that's all.
You put our national bird in the oven, is that correct?
Yeah, well,
and all of us had our mouths set for roast eagle with all the trimmings.
Yeah, well, I,
You did a thing like that?
Well, the two birds were lying there side by side.
The turkey was for the centerpiece, Charlie. I mean...
Well, they look so much alike
We blew it now. They're all sitting down at the table out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Started on their little nut cups. Already. We just have to switch the birds, that's all.
Yeah, well...
Serve them turkey instead of eagle. But it's kind of scrawny looking, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I thought I'd stuff some old bread in it and make it look a little fatter.
You do that, okay?
Okay.
As the white man's foothold increases, the red man's land diminishes. Seldom has history recorded such a phenomenal land transaction as that which took place on a little island in the Hudson River in 1626. There, a voice cries out in the wilderness, and a city is born.
Too many moons we live here, White Cloud. Time to unload this crummy island. Why we not live in Massachusetts like your brother? He get invited to lunch.
Big deal.
This place too hot in summer, too cold in winter. No place for Papoose to grow up. No chance for culture.
Well, he could run down to Carnegie Wigwam on Sunday afternoons, listen to Flying Birdstein explain the ceremonial dances.
You'll listen me. Sell Manhattan to white man. Get me plenty junk jewelry. All right?
All right. Me list with real estate agent. He find live one, okay?
Okay.
Okay, Chief, I think I got a live one for you. Dutchman, now when he gets here, let me do all the talking, all right? Hey, here he is now. Come in!
Say, that's pretty hot buffalo hide you got here on this teepee. I like to bust my knuckles.
Yeah, well, just so he didn't bust his pockets, eh, Chief?
Tishman's my name, Peter Tishman.
And this here is Chief White Cloud. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, I seen your listing in the paper here. For sale, Island, !! Ideal for summer festival. Gorgeous view, spell view, running water.
Wait a minute. What is that running water, bitch?
Not my wife, brother. He go with Island.
Oh, yeah.
Spacious trees, wall-to-wall grass, room for pool. What's pool?
It's like snooker.
Oh.
Well, that's it. Now, if you're in the market for an island friend, you couldn't go wrong, believe me.
What's the asking price?
You give us...
Let me handle this, will you, Chief? Now, a beautiful piece of property like this couldn't let it go for a nickel less than $32 worth of junk jewelry.
What, $32 for a crummy piece of undeveloped property like this? I'm gonna see you around.
Make it $29.50.
Go away.
Look, I don't like to haggle, Pete. Make it 28 and a quarter, huh?
Come on.
Wait a minute. Chief, when I give you the signal, bring on the Indians.
Right.
Now, look, Pete, baby, can't you see the possibilities? Step outside here. Look around you. Sure, it's a barren piece of wasteland now. Sure, it don't look like much. But someday... this little footpath is going to echo with the sound of dancing feet. Why, they're going to hang a sign right over there, and it's going to say Broadway. Yeah. This way, Mr. First Nighter. Put on your top hat, white feather and tails. Paint up your faces, you reds and you pales. Put on your beaded goods,
We're gonna do the woods, tap dance up the hills and down the dale. Remember, Thumb Day, this all will be Murphy and Thur, right here on Broadway. Corner 51st, yes, sir. You'll be a vital part of all the terribly smarts that
in your top hat, white feather and tails.
Here we go! Let me have it, boy! Stand up to your penthouse and look at the view. Mix with a show folk and Park Avenue, yes, sir. So gay and so aloof, name dropping on the rooftop,
drinking champagne by the pail. In your top hat, white feather and tails.
Say, that was a nice number. You kids get a pretty good sound out of them moccasins.
Yes, sir, considering they were tap dancing on dirt, too.
Well, I'm going to see you.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Make it 25 even. We'll toss in the Bronx.
No, I couldn't possibly see my way clear.
We throw in Staten Island.
You hear that? Is that a generous Indian? You'll have Manhattan, the Bronx, and Staten Island, too. Hello? Yeah, Dick. Mm-hmm. We use any more, we'll have to pay a royalty, huh? All right, sweetie, we'll knock it off. Right. Okay. Yeah, okay.
I'll give you $24.
Sold. But none of that cash stuff. The chief's wife wants strictly junk jewelry.
Baubles, bangles, bright, shiny beads.
Yeah, hold it, baby, will you? You're laying yourself wide open for another phone call.
Okay, it's a deal. Here you go. You're lucky the price wasn't no higher. I never carry more than $24 in junk jewelry.
Nice quality. Wife, flip.
All right, man, pack up those trees and let's get out of here.
What?
Strike the forest.
Wait a second. Where are you going with my trees?
What do you think? You bought a furnished island?
You mean all those trees was in park?
Yes, laugh on you. Whole island, solid concrete. Nothing grow except in little square place in middle of island.
But how am I going to get people to live on a solid concrete island?
Who would want to? Nice place to visit, but you wouldn't want to live here.
Yeah.
I guess you're right.
150 eventful years have passed. A new spirit of restlessness grips the 13 English colonies, smarting from what seems to them injustice at the hands of King George III. The American colonists yearn for liberty. Boston Harbor, 1774. Two figures huddle on the deck of a cargo ship, there in the darkness.
Geez, Charlie, you knocked that whole load of tea in the water there.
Well, I miscalculated with the block and tackle, that's
all. Yeah, well, I mean, you blew it. You missed the whole deck there.
Yeah, well, maybe nobody will notice.
Well, what do you mean? There's tea floating all over the place. I mean, how can I go and demand an hourly increase for you guys?
With fringe benefits
and all that if my men keep knocking stuff overboard.
Well, I'm sorry.
Sorry doesn't do any good, Charlie. Now, I'll cover for you this time, but let's get our story straight,
good,
okay?
Good.
Now, a bunch of those Patriot guys came sneaking around dressed up in...
How about in Indian suits?
That's good, in Indian suits.
Good.
They were a little loaded, and they shoved the tea over because they were sore about the tea tax, okay?
Okay. You think anybody will swallow that?
Well, it's just wild enough, Charlie.
Gee, look at it swirling around down there. I wonder where we could find a fortune teller that reads harbors.
The trouble continued to brew. It was a time for action and a time for words. On a hot July night in 1776, Benjamin Franklin was aroused from his work by the call of destiny.
Hey, in there, Ben?
Who's that, Sylvia?
It's the call of destiny.
Come on, take a look through the curtains there.
It
It's Tom Jefferson.
What, again? Well, it's no good. I'll have to let him in. I'm coming.
Hi, Ben.
Tom?
You got a minute?
Well, I tell you the truth. We were just going out of town for the weekend.
But it's only Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, you know, a penny saved is a penny earned.
Well, what does that got to do with anything, Franklin?
I don't know. It's the first thing came into my head. I was just making conversation. An idle brain is the devil's playground, you know.
So you're pretty good at that, aren't you?
Yeah, there's some new wise sayings I just made up.
Wise sayings?
Yeah, I call them wise sayings. Mm-hmm. Well, what can I do for you?
Well, I got this petition here. I've been circulating around the neighborhood. Kind of thought you'd like to sign it. It's called the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, I heard about that. Sounds a little suspect, if you ask me.
What do you mean, suspect?
Well, you're advocating the overthrow of the British government by force and violence, aren't you?
Well, yeah, but we've had it with that royal jazz.
Who's we?
Well, all the guys.
Who's all the guys?
Oh, George, Jim Madison, Alex Hamilton, Johnny Adams, you know, all the guys.
The lunatic fringe.
Oh, they are not.
Bunch of wild-eyed radicals. Professional liberals, don't kid me.
Oh, you call George Washington a wild-eyed radical?
Washington? I don't see his name on there.
No, but he promised to sign it.
Oh, yeah, that's George for you. Talks up a storm with them wooden teeth. Can't shut him off. When it comes time to put the name on the old parchment of Rooney, try and find him.
Hey, what are you so surly about today?
Surly to bed and surly to rise. Oh, makes
all right,
a man...
all right, let's knock off the one-line jokes and sign the petition. What do you say, huh, fella?
Well, let me skim down it here. When in the course of human events, so-and-so, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That's pursuit of happiness.
Well, all your S's look like F's here.
Well, it's stylish.
Oh, I see.
It's in. It's very in.
Oh, well, if it's in. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, so-and-so, solemnly publish and declare that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British crown, and so on. A little overboard, isn't it?
Well,
you write this?
Yeah, I knocked it out. It's just a first draft. You know.
Well, I tell you, why don't you leave it with me and I'll mail it in, huh?
Oh, come on.
No, I tell you, Tom, let me say this. I'm with you in spirit. I'm sure you understand that, but, you know, I got to play it conservative. I'm a businessman.
Yeah.
I got the printing business going pretty good. Almanac made Book of the Month. And then I got the inventions, you know. Got pretty good distribution on the stoves now. And, of course, every Saturday evening, I bring out the mag.
The what?
Magazine.
Oh. Oh, that reminds me, that artist I sent by, did you look at his stuff?
You mean the Rockwell boy? Skinny kid with the pipe?
Yeah, that's a kid.
Yeah, I glanced at it, and he's too far out for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know you got to play it safe.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But getting back to the signing of the petition, how about it, huh?
Well,
it's a harmless paper.
Oh, sure, harmless. I know how these things happen. You go to a couple of harmless parties, sign a harmless petition, and forget all about it. 10 years later, you get hauled up before a committee. No, thank you. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life writing in Europe.
Oh, come on.
Come on what?
Come on and put your name on the dotted line.
I got to be particular what I sign.
It's just a piece of paper.
Just a piece of paper, that's what you say.
Come on and put your signature on the list.
It looks to have a very subversive twist.
How silly to assume it. Won't you nom de plume it? Today, you're so skittish, who possibly could care if you do?
The Un-British Activities Committee, that's who.
Let's have a little drinko and fill the quill.
It sounds a little pinko to me, but still.
Knock off the timid manner if you want a banner to raise.
Banner to raise.
You must take,
I must take
a stand, for this brave, new land, for who wants,
to live,
so concerned,
innovative, I don't diss,
he don't diss,
agree, but a man can't be too careful what he signs. Well, if I sign it, will you renew your subscription?
Yeah, if you promise not to keep throwing it on the roof.
Well, my...
If it isn't on the roof, it's in the rose bushes or in the mud.
My eyesight isn't what it used to be, you know. Besides, it's hard to hit the porch from a horse.
Now, come on. All we want to do is hold a few truths to be self-evident.
You're sure it's not going to start a revolution or anything?
Trust me.
Okay, give it to me. You got a quill on you?
Here you are.
All right. Look at this show-off Hancock, will you? Pretty flamboyant signature for an insurance man.
Ah, you did a good thing, Ben. You won't be sorry. Now, if I can just get another three or four guys, we'll be all set.
Well, I tell you one thing.
What's that?
You better get them to sign it in the next couple of days before they all take off for the 4th of July weekend.
Words give way to open hostility, and history records that fateful year and the midnight ride of Paul Revere.
All right, there's a signal. Get on the horse, Levine.
That's Revere.
Revere, Levine, just so you ride a horse good. Now get going.
All right.
To arms! The British are coming! The British are coming! It's me, Paul Revere.
Who?
Revere.
I got all the pots and pans I need, sweetie.
But what about the British?
As far as I know, they got all the pots and pans they need, too.
As the seeds of turmoil flowered and grew, the hastily assembled American army craved a banner they could call their own. To a certain Philadelphia seamstress came General George Washington one day, in the icy winter of 1777.
Betsy? You in there, Betsy?
Who is it?
It's me, George.
Oh, boy. Come on in. Hey, hey, you ever hear of wiping your feet?
How's that?
You're tracking snow all over my early American rug.
Oh, yeah, sorry. All right, let's get out of business now. Have you got it finished?
Your flag?
No, no, my jacket.
Yeah, but don't you want to see the flag?
The flag can wait. I got a man outside from Esquire.
All right, you want to slip it on?
Please.
Okay, here we go. Take a look in the mirror there.
Is that a darling blazer?
Yeah, darling.
Is it me?
It's you. Huh? Now, how about we check over the flag?
Wait a minute. You think the lace on the cuffs is too much?
No, huh? It's fine.
You really like it?
I adore it. Now, about...
I wonder if I should have had the silk brocade instead of the lace.
Lace, brocade.
Say, these antique military buttons worked out real nice, huh?
Well, I'm
glad... Or should I have taken the mother of pearl?
We've been all through this, George. You wouldn't want the mother of pearl. Once you had them on, you'd hate them.
Yeah, but on the other hand...
Look, I made you a spiffy little blazer there. You got the lace on the cuffs and the antique military buttons and the gold epaulets and the emblem on the pocket.
All right.
Now, why don't you look at the flag, huh?
All right, all right.
Just a minute. Let me bite the thread off here.
Well, snap it up. Spread it out in your lap there and we'll... You having a little fun at your country's expense here? Huh?
How's that?
You're kidding with these colors? Red, white, and blue?
Well, those are the only remnants I had around...
Wait a minute. Stars? I deliberately said polka dots.
Huh?
Stars with stripes? How does that work together, design-wise?
All right, you want to be the big man and put on the thimble, huh?
No, it's just
that... Then how's about you let me run the flag department and you run the army like a nice father of our country, okay?
I know, but look at the colors you chose. The best you could do, I suppose. A peppermint stripe with royal blue, the same as the British colors, too. Now how will we tell whose side is who? Look at the colors you chose. Why couldn't it have been puce? Lavender over chartreuse, or possibly some exotic shade, the delicate orange mauve or jade, instead of the choice that has been made. Why couldn't it have been possibly cinnamon?
Everybody wants to be an art director. Everybody wants to call the shots.
Yeah, well.
Everybody wants to be a flag dissector, changing all my stars to polka dots.
I'd like it. How soon can you make one up?
Come on, there's your flag. Take it or leave it.
All right. Say, what's this little ticket here just fell out? Inspected by number 28.
That's me.
Oh, yeah.
You want it on a hanger?
No, I'll just run it up the flagpole, see if anybody salutes.
Okay.
I guess it's better than don't tread on me.
Certainly. Besides, 100 years from now, what the heck difference will it make?
I guess you're right. Come on, man.
As it turned out, everyone did salute. The new nation had its flag. The general had his jacket. And Mr. Benjamin Franklin had visitors.
So you want to write me up in your brand new magazine, eh, gentlemen?
That's right, Mr. Franklin.
You got a name for it?
We call it Time.
Kind of a short name, isn't it?
Apple. We think it's Apple.
Uh-huh.
Right to the point.
Uh-huh. Going to be a kind of a newsy little magazine, is it?
Yes, sir, that's right.
Well, I wish you all the luck in the world. The only thing is, I don't know if I should help you boys. You know, I am pushing a magazine of my own every Saturday.
Pink-cheeked humanitarian Franklin, master of a sprawling publishing empire, is an American institution above and beyond the pettiness of inter-magazine rivalry.
You see, that's pretty good. You just write that?
No, I just said it. We all speak that way down at the office. Parenthesis, C press, close parenthesis.
Well, what's your angle?
Well, sir, we heard through the grapevine that portly, dynamic Ben Franklin this week capped his multifaceted career with his surest fired gimmick since the Franklin stove.
That's right.
Latest entry from the BF stables, bifocal glasses. Printer, author, inventor, diplomat, sometime philosopher Franklin claims he has revolutionized spectacles.
You guys sure have a stilted way of speaking there.
Now, I wonder if we could get a shot of you, sir.
Oh, this other gentleman's the photographer.
Yes.
I didn't catch your name.
Dapper, thrice married, Fred Livingston, one time.
Now, cut that out.
Would you mind peering over those little square glasses and quipping something witty?
All right, let me get them on here. Oh, say, can I see?
Try again.
Right? Honesty is the best policy.
If you don't mind my saying so, sir, isn't that just a little bit old hat?
Okay, a rolling hat gathers no moss.
Do you mind if we punch it up a bit?
Sure, change a couple words there if you want.
By the way, do you have any other inventions up your clever, velvet, sometime tailor-made sleeve?
Well, I might just have it that, parenthesis, see science, close parenthesis.
Now you're getting the hang of it.
If you'll excuse me a moment, I may have an exclusive for you.
Meanwhile, as lightning crackles overhead, history is made in the backyard of Mr. Benjamin Franklin.
Myron? Oh, Myron, where are you?
Over here, Mr. Franklin, with a kite.
All right. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Well, you got it way up there?
Yeah, she's really up there.
Explain to me again now what the gimmick is here.
Well, I figure it this way. The lightning strikes the kite and is conducted down the string.
Is what?
Is conducted. That means it travels down the string to this little key I've got.
What little key?
That key right there.
Oh, yeah, you got a little key on there.
Well, now watch. You see the sparks coming from the key? That's electricity.
Why, it's a miracle. The parenthesis, see religion, close parenthesis.
Huh?
Listen, you feel any tingling sensation in your hand there? I mean, it hurt to hold on to the string?
No, can't feel a thing. Oh, by the way, how are you enjoying them little square glasses I made for you? Those special lenses make it easier to read, don't they?
Yeah, and now about the kite.
I told you you'd like them. Just a matter of getting used to them.
Look, Myron.
I told Dad I thought it was the best thing I'd done since my stove.
I wish you wouldn't discuss these things with your father. Now, about the kite.
Well, the way I figure it, this proves that lightning is really electricity.
My goodness, what a discovery. Tonight, mankind is taking a great leap forward. Parenthesis, see sports.
Close parenthesis.
Close parenthesis.
Mr. Franklin?
Where are you, Mr. Franklin?
Hand me the kite. Here comes the press.
Over here, gentlemen. Right over here.
December 1776, on the banks of the Delaware, cruel winds whistle through the threadbare clothing of the 8,000-man American army. All too aware of General Howe's powerful troops across the icy waters, they await the decision of their leader, General George Washington. For he and he alone can make the choice upon which hinges the destiny of their infant nation.
All right, then. How much you want for the boat that says Popeye on it?
$1.20 an hour.
Uh-huh. Well, how about the one that says Donald Duck on it?
Eh?
The one with the little striped awning there?
Oh, yeah. Well, that boat right there?
That boat right there?
That boat right
That's
there?
That's the boat.
Will run you $2 an hour.
What? That's an outrage. This is December. It's your off-season.
Huh.
How many customers can you get this time
Look,
of year?
Look, fella, you run the army and let me run the boat rental, okay?
All right. Don't get smart with me. I'm General Washington.
I know who you are. I seen your picture on the money, and I wish you'd make up your mind. The boat rides are closing.
Well, let's review them once again here. Popeye was $1.20 an hour.
That's
yeah.
$1.20 an hour.
And the one with the striped awning.
General Duck.
Yep.
General Washington, sir.
Yes, what is it?
The men are freezing. So? So we were wondering if
yes?
we could come to some decision on the boat.
Yeah, they think they got problems. I just had my wig set this morning, and this damp air isn't doing it any good. Look at it, straight as a stick.
Well, it looks just fine to me, sir.
Really?
Huh? Yes, yes.
Think it looks all right?
Listen, you're going to rent a boat tonight or not? I'd like to freeze my ears off.
All right, don't rush me.
If we could make a decision on the boat, sir, it'll soon be daylight.
Well! Let it be daylight. We're liable to tip over out there at night.
Yes, well, there was the element of surprise in the whole thing, don't you see, sir?
Oh. Well, all right, you can get the men loaded in the other boats. Get that out of the way.
They are in the other boats, sir. They have been for hours. Now, if we could just come
all
to
right,
some...
All right, hold your horses.
We ate the horses yesterday, sir.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll be with you
did
shortly.
Did you really eat the horses yesterday?
I didn't. They did. Enlisted man. Now I got it narrowed down to two here. Popeye has the dear little seats in it.
Yes, yes.
That's $1.20.
Uh-huh.
See? And Donald Duck has the striped awning.
I see.
$2. Now I'll leave it up to you, Lieutenant. Doesn't that strike you as a little high?
Well, I don't know, sir. Perhaps a bit, but...
All right, you see there? Huh. Now what would you say to $1.75 for Donald Duck?
$2 an hour, not a penny less.
Say, what are you trying to do, gouge a serviceman?
Ask, what are you army guys trying to do? Stifle the small businessman?
Why, that's ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous.
All right, then. Kick the end of Donald Duck around there again. Let me see it.
I can't. My feet are frozen.
Oh.
Look, mister, why don't you take the one called Popeye? You'll be happy with that boat. The price is right. $1.20 an hour.
Well, I don't know. You like it, Lieutenant?
She's a beaut, sir. Besides, we're only renting it for the one night.
But you really like it better than the one with the awning.
You wouldn't want the one with the awning, sir. Once you got into it, you'd hate it. Honestly, take the other one.
Popeye, you think it's really me?
Yes, on my word, sir, it's you.
But I just don't know about the color.
The color is fine. Black is a great color. It sets off your wig.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Popeye it is.
I tell you, boy, I've seen some customers, but this guy's a loo-loo.
Now, we got everything, the flag?
Right, sir.
The ukulele?
Yes, sir.
The sandwiches?
The boatman has some right here, sir.
Oh. What kind you got there?
I got ham and Swiss, liverwurst, or tuna salad.
Well, let me see, is he... Tuna salad, good today?
It's you, it's you.
All right, how much?
25 cents.
What, 25 cents for a tuna salad sandwich?
Here, take it with my blessing.
Well,
hey,
I...
Take a liverwurst, too. Enjoy, enjoy.
And so the Delaware was crossed. Thus was begun one of the most glorious pages in American history.
Imagine that guy. Wanted 25 cents. Lousy tuna. Whoops, watch where you're rolling there. You might like the little boat I picked up right here? Called Popeye.
And America has always gone forward on the sound of marching feet to the military beat of drums, drums, drums. Helping to hold the banner high, stirring the hearts of her fighting men, this then is the spirit of 76.
What do you mean you're walking off the job?
Like I'm walking off the job, man. I don't have to work with that kind of square drummer.
Well,
man.
I don't see it.
No, I mean, when I accepted the gig, I didn't know I was going to have to play fife with the kind of moldy fig drumming. Like, what is going on up ahead there, man? No.
Moldy.
Now, the kid here is on second drums, and the kid is swinging pretty good. But we can't make it swing with that other cat, Dick.
You tell him, Bix.
Look here now, we're engaged in battle. The army's depending
on
you.
Well, too bad, man. Like, you're back here holding the flag. You don't have to walk next to him, you know?
Well, what exactly is your objection to the man?
Well, in the first place, anybody with a name like Yankee...
Doodle.
Yeah, well, the name says it, man, you know?
Yes, but what is the main problem?
Like, it's a toss-up between the drumming and the singing, man.
The singing.
I got a bandage around my ears, but it doesn't help much. It's a bad sign.
Well, let's walk back up there and talk to him, see if we can't straighten it out.
Yeah, well, you know.
All right, Doodle, the fife player and the other drummer want to leave. Now, what seems to be the trouble?
They're out of step with me, that's what's the trouble.
Is that true?
Oh, wow, he wants to play yup-up-up-up-up-up-up, and it ought to go scoopy doopy doopy doop bow 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 ya bow ooh chicka-boom. Man, like, you didn't say anything about that we were going to work up near the cannonballs, man. I mean, I thought we were working like a officer's club dance, man.
Let's get on with the procession here, gracious.
Yes, now, let's make an effort and play it like Doodle wants to.
Yeah, well, it's a drag.
Get on with the marching here. You know.
Father and I went down to camp along with Captain Gooding. There we saw the men and boys as thick as hasty. Everybody!
Thank you, Doodle, keep it up.
Keep it up and we'll blow the whole wall.
Mind the music and the step and with the girls behind.
I heard that.
Yankee Doodle came to town a riding on a pony. He stuck a feather in his cap and called it back a
yes, sir! I'm a Yankee Doodle.
That's all, man. That's it.
I'm hip.
That's it.
Come on, pick up your instruments there.
No, that's it, man.
What's the
you know.
Trouble now?
It's a bad scene, man, right?
Bad scene, Bix.
Come on, you're holding up the whole parade.
Let's stop the bickering in the ranks here. Do you want the war to end on a note of triumph or disaster?
Like either way, man. Just so it swings.
Now look.
Scooby-Doo.
Let's reach a compromise here. Play it 8 bars your way and 8 bars Doodle's.
All right.
Crazy.
Yankee Doodle, keep it up. Yankee Doodle, dandy. Find the music and the step and...
Okay, out of the way, man. Like,
well, that was pretty rude. Hold it, people, please!
Swinging pretty good there, Daddy.
You've influenced me a lot, Vic.
Yeah, well, you know.
Outrageous! You ruined the whole... selection. Person.
Yorktown, 1781. This was the climax. Pitifully short of food and supplies, the tattered American army is reduced to a mere handful. While destiny held its breath, General George Washington courageously faced the most awesome challenge of his career.
All right, once again now.
Yes, sir.
You think I ought to surrender in the blue blazer or the trench coat?
Well, the trench coat is nice, sir.
Let me slip the blue blazer on once again just to give you the idea.
Sir, that won't be necessary. I remember the
Well,
blazers.
I'll just give you the idea. You
You've
know.
Tried it on 12 times.
Well, you can't rush into these things.
Yes, pardon me, General Washington?
Yes, who are you?
Snyder's my name. I'm from American Bell and Bell. I've got a statement here that's 2 years overdue for that big 5,000-pound job in Philadelphia.
What? You expect us to pay for that bell? Huh. Had a crack in it as long as your arm.
Well, I don't know anything about a crack. All I know is I'm supposed to get something on the account.
Look, I'm going down in history at the moment. Could you come back in a little while?
Well, if you could give us a portion of it now and the balance after you get the country straightened out.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Now, I'll leave it up to you, Mr. Schneider. Do you see me surrendering a blue blazer with antique military...
Watch yourself, sir!
Buttons, not too ivy, just...
General Washington, sir.
Yes, what is it, Lieutenant?
I have an idea how we might not have to surrender after all.
What do you mean? I'm all dressed for the occasion.
But, sir, your country is at stake. Now, here's my idea. You know the Rockwell boy who works on Franklin's magazine?
The one he just hired?
Yeah, skinny kid with a pipe.
Right.
I can have him here in 15 minutes, sir.
Uh-huh.
I'll get him a big piece of canvas, 500 yards long, some brushes, a lot of paint.
I see.
But we've got to work fast, sir.
Uh-huh.
Finish by daybreak. Now, here's my plan. While the British are sleeping...
Good morning, Lord Cornwallis.
Oh, hello, Bradshaw. Fine morning, isn't it, old man? Just the sort of morning to defeat the American rebels, right?
Right, sir.
Well, then, shall we mount the attack and muddle through to victory? What was that?
English horns.
No, before that.
Gunfire. Oh, the Americans, General. Look, they must have brought up 20,000 fresh troops during the night.
Yeah. Let me have the glass.
Here's it.
No, the other one.
Jove, you're right.
Look at them all out there. How fierce they look.
Why, they're not moving a muscle. Seem to be frozen in their tracks. Almost like a painting. A grim visage of war. My, look at the determination on that fellow. The skinny kid with the pipe. Hello. They've begun their barrage.
Great heavens, Lord Cornwallis. I'm afraid we've had it.
Yes. Well, time for the better part of valor and all that. Shall we go?
After you, sir.
Righto.
You think it's working, Lieutenant?
Well, I don't... Wait! General Washington!
Huh?
Here come a couple of British officers waving a white flag!
Stop all that dreadful shooting, old man.
All right, wait a minute. Let me kill the sound effect here. Okay, you guys. Strike the war set. Roll it up.
Good heavens. We've been diddled.
Did I hear you surrender there?
Yes, but look here, old fellow. It's not cricket. You're not playing the game.
What's that?
We thought you had a whole regiment here. Look, Bradshaw, the whole thing was nothing but a ruddy painting, a backdrop.
That's right. Well, a little gimmick I thought up there. Actually, our army was routed yesterday. Nobody here but me, the lieutenant, and the skinny kid with the... Where'd he go?
You rolled him up in the backdrop, sir.
Oh, yes. Well, release him there. You all right, young man?
Give him a poke.
Poor wretch. Has his pipe jammed in his cheek. Give him a hand, Bradshaw.
Oh, yes, of course. Ruined a good Cape Woody there.
Fortunes of war.
I say, Lord Cornwallis, this whole thing is...
No, Bradshaw. Well, you fellows win, I guess.
Yes, well, that's the way it goes, you know.
Of course, the king will be livid.
Uh-huh. Well, you still have most of the rest of the world. Mustn't be piggy.
Quite so, yeah.
Say, you mind if I try on the sword there?
Go right ahead.
Yeah, all right. What do you think? Is it me?
Lord Cornwallis.
Is it me?
It's you, yes. What is it, Bradshaw?
Oh, could I speak to you privately?
Yes, all right. Excuse us, please.
No, if you'll permit me, sir. There's only the three of them. Now, one signal from you, and we'll take them all prisoner.
My dear fellow, look at it this way. Now that those chaps have won, this makes us foreigners, right?
Right.
And we all know how foolishly generous the Americans are.
You mean?
Yes. Tomorrow, we apply for foreign aid.
I say, what a smashing idea.
You ready, gentlemen?
Any time, actually.
So long, friend. We have come to the end of the battle that we all deplore.
That highly military, script by Dory Sherry,
Revolutionary War!
Mr. Freeburg?
Yes?
I'm from the Daughters of the American
Rebel. Later.
The United States of America is a Stan Freeberg production.
Indeed. 1961. All-time classic, classic comedy radio, or audio, really, since it was produced as an album. But radio it is. Freeberg excelling in those kinds of things. This is WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and webcasting over WBAI.org. The program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund, and we are about done in, but minutes. However, like last week, Lister is not yet here. He came in during my closing music. Let's hope that happens again. But if not, I will have to cue up some stuff because I gotta be out of here. It's been a very, very long day for me. And while I'm an air junkie and I could play more Freeberg and stuff like that, that it's simply not in the... Not what I'm capable of this morning. At any rate, let me mention that we have a reading coming up April 21st at 388 Atlantic Avenue. That is the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, and our readers will be Sam J. Miller, who is currently nominated for the Nebula Award for his story We Are the Cloud, which he will be reading a version of, and the great, the wonderful Samuel R. Delaney, formerly of WBAI, currently of Temple University, just had his 73rd birthday, and one of the grand masters of science fiction, as voted in by the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. So, that's April 21st. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. at 388 Atlantic Avenue on the ground floor. So I hope that you will join us. Admission is free. Donations accepted to offset the cost of the reading. Thank you all for listening. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. I will be back next week with various things of science fiction. I have any numbers of interviews in the can and a couple more coming and a lot to talk about regarding the Hugos, which is the other award, the popularity award, which this year have, gotten a lot of controversy, as they say. So, next week, Wednesday morning at 1:30 a.m., tune in and enjoy. And stay tuned for, I don't know what, but we'll find out. With any luck, Lister will be here soon. Oh yeah, Steel Ice Fan is coming to New York in June. Stay tuned for more details on that.
Sales.
Well, for lack of having something else to put on at the moment, what I will do is put on What's the Frequency, Kenneth? By the wonderful Paul Fisher, which is scheduled to be on at 5 a.m. and hopefully will be again at 5 a.m. But I got to put up 2 hours to play for now, and that's what I've got at hand for the moment. We may fade down and substitute it for something else, but in the meantime, here is the latest and current episode of WTFK.
Next on What's the Frequency, Kenneth?
I can't wait forever. Even though he wants me to.
Today begins the journey to take America back.
Forever. To know if you'll be true.
To rescue a great country now adrift, join me
with them alone.
As together we seek a new vision for America. Today, I announce with God's help, with the help of liberty lovers everywhere, that I am putting myself forward as a candidate for President of the United States.
Rand Paul is here.
I have a message. A message that is loud and clear and does not mince words. We've come to take our country back. Take our country back from the special interests that use Washington as their personal piggy bank. The special interests that are more concerned with their personal welfare than the general welfare.
Time won't let me. Time won't let me. Time won't let me.
So, after Ted Cruz, now we have Rand Paul vying to be among the top tier of GOP hopefuls, positioning themselves as the not Jeb Bush alternative for GOP nominee. I'm Paul Fisher. Of course, Rand Paul is selling a different vision. An ophthalmologist, actually.
When you come in to see me, I put down a little diagnostic code, and there was 18,000 of these. But under Obamacare, they're going to keep you healthier because now there's going to be 100.
Okay, folks, we are switching course. We are going to play an episode instead of All Mixed Up, and this program that you are currently hearing, the What's the Frequency, Kenneth, will come on at its appointed hour at 5 a.m. Or Lister will come in and begin Burn Baby Burn Clapper. Wait, he is here. He is coming. He is approaching the studio, I believe, if I'm looking at the monitors correctly. Maybe I'm not looking at them correctly. Maybe that's... No, that's one of the WHCR people. So, instead, Peter Beauchamp will be coming to the rescue via recording with a recent episode of All Mixed Up from, just 2 days ago. And then that will be followed by What's the Frequency, Kenneth? So stay tuned and, here we go. Is Paul Fisher's fine program. How do I I've got it. I hit it, but it's working.
WBAI, the station with that guy Peter.
Exactly 1 minute, the broadcasting channels of the entire world will be cleared.
All right, then, now, listen to me. Those who haven't played the game will tell you how to do it. Are you ready?
10 seconds. Ready on one. Stand by two.
Just be perfectly natural, easy, and relaxed. A real country. Now, when that red light is on, that camera is on you.
And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, a newcomer to Memphis television, but sure to become an old friend. A face in the crowd, starring that Arkansas traveler,
Peter Beauchamp.
Oh, good, you're here.
Hi.
Do you sing?
I'd rather he hit me than listen to him. Words come out of his mouth, you think you're going to hear something, you get hit with feathers.
When he talks to me and gets away with it, I'll tell you what it is.
All Mixed Up with Peter Beauchamp.
It's the excitement that don't die.
Listen up, turdbags.
All Mixed Up, Peter Beauchamp. And you all mixed up.
Hey.
Mischief now. Really am in love, and how I'm through playing with fire. It's you whom I desire. All the world can plainly see you're the only one for me. I have told them in advance they can't break up our romance. Living up to every vow, keeping out of mischief now.
Thank you.
at you the first time I looked into them eyes. You have a certain little cute way of flirting with them eyes. They make me feel so happy. They make me feel so blue. I'm falling, no stalling, falling in a great big way for you. My heart is jumping, you started something with them eyes. You'd better look out, little brown eyes, if you wise. Way for you. My heart is jumping. You started something with them.